Ahoy! You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. On tap today, we have Howard Krieger, CEO of Aegis Trust Company, and Scott Christensen, Director of University of Missouri Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. We'll be talking about what caused the banking collapse, how much crypto played a role in it, and the possibility of a widening gap between small and large banks. Enjoy! Welcome, everybody. A lot of new faces here, so you might be confused. What the hell is going on? This is the 156th Diffuse Tap. The way that it works is we're going to very briefly talk about Diffuse Tap, the event you're in right now, and Diffuse, the company that's kind of like hosting this. And then we're going to do a fireside chat with Mr. Howard Krieger and Scott Christensen for about 15 minutes. And then you're going to do two more rounds of breakout rooms, one, two, kind of similar to what you just experienced. Now, the audience is pretty much all alternative investors of one flavor or another, pretty heavy on crypto. So it's a chance for you to meet a bunch of new folks in a very short period of time in a small group format, because this is mostly a networking event. A lot of people are here just to meet folks. We usually get three or so continents represented each week. So it's a really good chance to broaden your horizons. But we do want you to learn a little bit, which is why we have folks like Mr. Krieger and Mr. Christensen on to talk about what they're up to and just kind of opine on what's going on in the larger world. If you like the networking portion of this, we do in-person versions, pretty casual affairs. The next one is in Berlin. Oh, I can't actually
date TBC. So that'll be announced.
All right. In June, date TBC. Tricky. So we will give you the details when that's all hammered down. So we do them all over the place. Last week, Mr. Culver hosted one in Atlanta. So thank you, David, for doing that. Diffuse is a fund platform. Our big push right now is our Diffuse Digital 30 product, which is an index fund of the top 30 cryptocurrencies, market cap weighted, monthly rebalanced. We're actually in the process of listing it here in the United States. So we do offer a small profit share for folks coming in kind of at the moment. So if you have any interest in that, come hit us up and we'll give you all the deets. But that's enough about us. Let's hear from the speakers du jour. So maybe we'll start with you, Mr. Howard Krieger. You want to unmute yourself, tell the folks a little bit about your background and what you're up to over at Aegis.
Sure, Kenny. Thank you for having us and welcome, everybody. This is a great forum. It's my second swing at the bat here, so happy to be here. I'm currently Chief Administrative Officer of Aegis Trust Company. They're a state-chartered, SEC-qualified custodian of digital assets in the United States, one of five. We also have a license in Singapore and Hong Kong, making us the only U.S. SEC qualified custodian that also has a national global transfer capability, where we typically serve token foundations, gift and estate attorneys in the U.S., funds, tokenized funds that are looking to keep their tokens in a safe harbor and the like. So for safe custody, we're a non-depository DOB regulated institution.
Amazing. Thanks for coming here. And Mr. Christensen, if you want to do the same, and fun little fact about me, I went to school about 30 minutes north of Mizzou up at Truman State. So tell the folks a little bit background on what you're up to.
You probably came down to Mizzou to party, though.
Once or twice. Yes, indeed.
All right. Very good. My name is Scott Christensen, and I'm a professor in the business school here. And I'm a little bit different than some of my colleagues in that I am not in a research position, but a teaching position. So I ran a business, an IT business here in Columbia for many years and try to teach my students about emerging technologies. So probably in 2017 or 18, I made something called a blockchain game to try to explain to them how blockchain works. And in our breakout room, we were talking about what are good applications and what are not, and try to walk them through that. And then trying to look at other technologies that have emerged from that, such as NFTs and central bank digital currencies, have been my latest thing that I'm interested in. And I try to be as agnostic as possible, although I do have my opinions on some of these things. So happy to be here. Very excited at very interesting format. And I'll leave it at that.
Awesome. We'll hop right into it. So this session is a little bit to talk about crypto and banking and the banking collapse that we experienced recently. First question, up would be this banking collapse that we had over the last 2 months, Silvergate, Signature, First Republic, Silicon Valley Bank, all the good ones. What role did crypto play in that, if any, or was it just collateral damage? Maybe I'll ask the one to Howard first and then.
Sure, we'll do that. Certainly. And just for everyone's edification in the chat, I threw my LinkedIn if you want to connect. So, and then Scott, maybe you should go ahead and do the same. So what's interesting, so I spent 10 years in banking, Wells Fargo, HSBC, before joining KPMG and being a national leader in banking valuation and risk. The interesting thing with this collapse was the run on the liability side. So deposits in the banks are liabilities. So whereas 2007 and 2008, you had underperformance of the investment and a mismatch in the timing or duration of the asset of the bank relative to the liability. Here you had the liabilities running off. Was crypto involved? You know, Scott, I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I think that it has to really do with these banks having some of them having such a narrow industry focus, being the VCs and then the entities that got the VC money, that when the VC capital dried up with the Fed raising rates, then you just had this domino effect where the VCs didn't have cash, the startups needed to use their money, and the banks just were long as the government basically went against the banks.
Yeah, I think you're right, Howard. And I think, we know a little bit more now. Things have calmed down. When Silicon Valley Bank first collapsed, there was a lot of panic. And I think there was a question of motivations by some of the VCs that were heavily invested in crypto because they did not comport themselves professionally, shall we say, on Twitter and got all excited about things and about how the government is horrible and this is why we need crypto. And a lot of people were like, well, wait a second, these guys are benefiting from the collapse of the dollar. So I think there is this kind of animosity that exists between the crypto world and the traditional banking world. I think we kind of saw that on display to some degree. And I think it's a little bit problematic because there's a certain level of distrust there, right? So I'm questioning if Howard was on one side of this, I'm questioning his motivations and he might question mine. And so I think that was something we saw as a question of motivations and, perception is reality, right? So and that also plays into the whole thing about central bank digital currencies too. So.
Okay. We'll come back to that, the CBDC, because that is a whole can of worms. But I guess, Howard, back to you. A question is, so you touched on it a little bit. Oh, quick note, programming note for the audience. If you have any questions for the speakers, do not be shy about chucking them into the chat. We'll pick up as many of them as we can in the short period we have. But Howard, why just those banks? Inflation or interest rates have not been going up just in the United States. This has been a global phenomenon, but I haven't heard about any other, high profile blowups in any other countries. And it's really, an isolated number. What made it special? Why are these banks unique?
So if you take risk and do that basic cut of systematic versus unsystematic, you could say that inflation is a systematic risk that really hurt the unrealized losses on the investments of all banks globally. All banks have to basically invest their liabilities in different termed instruments, and the longer-term instruments got hurt the most. Here, the unsystematic kind of commonality is almost the perception, not so much the reality, but the perception of who banked with these entities. First Republic, Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate, they're all concentrated in that Silicon Valley startup area. Signature was interesting because Signature, if you recall, there was no headline. It was open and then one day it was closed. And so we don't know what happened behind the scenes there, I don't believe. But I think the unsystematic commonality is regional bank thought to be heavily concentrated in an industry where liabilities were going to start screaming off the balance sheet. And as people see the stock price fall, they equate the equity value with the health of the bank, even though the equity is really kind of that headroom between the bank's assets and its liabilities.
So you're taking the position that it's really the run, the liabilities that drove it and the perception, and no small amount of that probably should be thrown at Peter Thiel's feet.
And right? It's still happening. I hate to say it. It's still happening, but it's not in the headlines. And the big banks are getting bigger because entities are moving their assets. It's small, it's dribs and drabs. Bank runs take months, not days.
Go Jamie Dimon. Scott, you agree with that perception or do you have a different take on it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, Kenny, you just kind of mentioned the idea of one VC. Not only we have Silicon Valley Bank as being concentrated in a particular sector of startups, you also have a number of venture capital firms that are very large that are recommending that all their startups go there or all their startups withdraw. So you have another type of institutional risk, which I'm sure Silicon Valley Bank thought it was great when Andreessen Horowitz was, you know, funneling business their way. But then when Andreessen Horowitz says, okay, wait a second, something's going wrong here, let's get our money out, everybody withdraw, you can have just a dozen people that might be able to initiate a bank run. And so I think that's one of the kind of accelerant that Howard's kind of mentioning there. So it's different than the systematic risk, but it's a institutional risk of not only specializing in a particular area, but also having, this type of control that was outside of those startups. So
do we believe that if there were CBDCs in the world, that, for example, what happened to USDC would not have happened? It dropped by 10% when Silicon Valley Bank dropped off the face of the earth. Would that have made a difference? And would CBDCs create more confidence in crypto? Or is it more like an institutionalized government initiative to take away the kind of fundamentals of what makes crypto exciting for everybody who wants to be the future of banking?
Scott, please. I know this is a juicy topic for you, so go ahead.
Yeah, so there's both the idea of a wholesale central bank digital currency in which it would be used for bank-to-bank transfers. And I think a lot of banks are very interested in that because of the antiquated SWIFT and ACH transfer methods. And see that as one way to help. But when we start to get into retail and start to think about a digital dollar that you would have in your wallet and you would be able to, be stored on a blockchain or something like that, then I think we're starting to see something that's more about governmental control. There might be some great benefits. Transparency would be one. You could see, how's money actually being spent at the University of Missouri? You could see that into that blockchain database. You could see maybe where that money flows, but you start to get all the complications that come with our current banking system is transferred over in some ways, because it's not going to be a system where we're not, I can't see a central bank digital currency that doesn't know their customer, right? So crypto is nice because not only does it get more people help the unbanked, it really kind of turns them into a bank, right? I mean, that's the neat thing about it. And I don't see that that is the solution. If you look at what happened in Nigeria, kind of interesting, they launched their crypto, I think about 24 months ago, their central bank digital currency. It is about half of a percent of usage, which is kind of odd because they are one of the heaviest uses of crypto. And so I think the government thought, oh, well, people really like our digital dollar. Well, they probably are using Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies for reasons other than they just wanted the convenience of a digital dollar, right? So it's not clear that even though the bankers kind of like it, whether people will like it or not. And it kind of scares me when we start to look at authoritarian governments, what they could do with that. China has experimented a lot with airdropping their renminbi. That's kind of a state that also likes to control people, right? And you have to, we saw the president there reelected with a unanimous out of so many thousand representatives. So not exactly a democracy. So it's kind of disturbing whether these could be used as another method of control. So that's where I'm getting into my opinions here. So I'm getting a little bit into the Scott soapbox that even though I'm a technologist and I really, fascinated by technology, I'm not sure I like this one.
And I got to say, what I find interesting is that the banking is one of the few industries where inefficiency has been built into the business model, that the purposeful delay with approvals, paperwork, forms, et cetera. Even the mere act of entering a PIN, you know, when you put your debit card in, these are all built in to the economics. And I think the challenge with the CBDC is that if you make markets too efficient too quickly, that you're going to have this kind of bullwhip effect where, again, you're going to have greater, faster bank runs at a scale much larger than regional banks are prepared to handle. So even like someone asked the question, isn't CBDCs, which by the way, in the US is nicknamed Project Hamilton. And if you remember what Hamilton did, is Hamilton basically sold the soul of states' rights in order to centralize money in America. The reality here is that with CBDC potential efficiency, that might cause more harm to the existing banking system than the efficiency pickup gets everyone.
All right, that's an interesting take. So you want some inefficiency. I mean, I can see it, right? You need to be able to have an individual like having a control of transactions, which I guess takes us back to a question from, kind of circuitously to Rick Dwyer's question. Do you think banks can really work with crypto in general? Like clients and like crypto clients, is they're just going to all move offshore because they saw what happened to the First Republic and the Signatures of the World, and they just don't want to take that risk anymore. So they're going to move to, I don't know, the Caymans and Bahamas. Is it hurting innovation in the US? Maybe Scott, back to you.
Well, from what I've seen from our banks is they were interested in how crypto could be part of an investment portfolio. And now they've kind of backed away from that. As far as their wealth management departments. Other than that, I'm not really sure. But I have seen the kind of when crypto was going up and up, they were like, oh, we better get into this. And now they're not so inclined, it seems like.
And Scott, let me add to that. So the FDIC, OCC, and the Fed issued a joint statement in January where they basically came out and said, that from their understanding, because it's a very passive aggressive memo they wrote, from their understanding, there's nothing in a national chartered bank's permissions that allow them to custody public blockchain, public on-chain assets. They also said that they don't believe, and this is both the FDIC, the OCC, and the Fed all said that they do not believe that any bank or state chartered trust or what have you have the ability to properly manage and mitigate the risks associated with digital assets that are on public blockchains. So in essence, what those three entities that are, they're the ones calling the shots, right? Golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rule. What they said was, if it's private on-chain assets, the banks can handle it. Public, they're not touching it. And I don't see them moving off of that anytime soon. And I don't know what that means for CBDCs, as one of the callers asked. If the FDIC and the Fed and the OCC are saying that banks can't handle the risk of public on-chain assets, how does a CBDC differ?
I mean, those are contradictory thoughts. We'll stick with that actually, Howard, just for a second, go a little deeper. Is that just burying their heads in the sand? Like saying we don't have that expertise and then no banks have that expertise today and that without providing a roadmap to how they can actually get comfortable with it and avoiding that innovation? Is that short-sighted? This is like a crazy question, but go ahead.
they're under no obligation to provide any solutions. If anyone on this call who's worked with regulated entities before, you know, I work with the South Dakota Division of Banking all the time, and they basically ask you to make the rope that you give them that they will eventually hang you with. So AML, BSA, KYC, all these frameworks are not instruction manuals on how to run a business, a financial institution. They basically are a framework for you to then create the rules that they will check and audit and make sure you're following. So I think from the Fed and the OCC's perspective, they're just saying, look, we don't have rules on the books to deal with this stuff. And yeah, frankly, we don't think that you, independent nationally chartered bank, could figure out the right way to do this. This is why the OCC is trying to step back Anchorage's bank charter, because when Brian Brooks greenlit it as a lame duck chair, the rest of the organization didn't feel that the proper infrastructure was in place to manage the risks.
Scott, anything you want to add to that concept or idea?
No, I think that's a very interesting take on it. And I think, you know, bankers buy by default are very conservative, and certain banking regulators are even more conservative. So I do think that, you know, I think we need banks to be able to take risks. And I'm a little bit worried that all that's happening right now will discourage banks from taking important risks.
Fair enough. Well, unfortunately, those 15 minutes go by so damn fast. So we're at the end of our time. So we're going to have to pop into another breakout room. Before we do, a couple of housekeeping items for y'all, if I can find the slide. There we go. Networking, not pitching. Please be respectful of that and each other. And then the big one is we don't do a full participant list for privacy reasons. So if you meet somebody you want to connect with, and that happens a lot in these rooms, stop details then and there, or join our Telegram group, introduce yourself. Great for making connections. It's a pretty lively community. But Ms. Isla, do you have a topic for our good folks to potentially discuss?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of them is, which country do you think will effectively implement CBDCs first? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we will see you all back here in about 10 minutes.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back, one and all. Oh, man, Scott and Howard, I forgot to warn you. We always ask the same question. So now we're going to be putting you on the spot. Scott, if you want to take it first, tell us the future. What do you see coming down the pipe that you're excited by? And you do get brownie points if you happen to come up with something the audience doesn't know about. Those brownie points interchangeable for nothing.
Well, I will, and instead, I will tell you about an exciting thing that I met with a high school teacher that's doing something exciting for blockchain, and has developed his own cryptocurrency called Gradecoin. And he is in a bunch of Catholic dioceses up in New York. And they, the students, as they increase their grades and get their homework done, they actually earn coin, and then they can turn it in the commissary for, you know, snacks and other sorts of things that might be cool that those kids would want. And he's actually run this experiment and seen how he could incentivize students, because he's able to take the 20 some different schools and just do this in 10 of them, and then have the other and then compare the grades. And so I think that was a very interesting usage. And so in education, I see the future for that high school faculty member and the students that are working on him, with him, doing great things to incentivize students. So micro incentivization as a future industry that we'll all be talking about.
I love it. Works in Catholic schools and also prisons. So Mr. Krieger.
Sure. I see Facebook and Ancestry.com merging, taking all the combined data from the cutting edge and history etched onto the blockchain through hash, etched onto acrylic blocks, shot in every direction from the planet into all the four corners of the galaxy in an attempt to outrace the supernova of the sun in 5 billion years. And so then when the aliens find those acrylic blocks, they figure out how to decipher the blockchain, and they learn all about McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Bernard Goetz and Coca-Cola and everything from We Didn't Start the Fire.
All right. I mean, we did it with a record at one point. So you're thinking we're to take that and just scale the hell out of it.
Of human history, individual's experience and relation.
That's what I call a long-term view. I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
5 billion. That's N plus right. 5 billion.
Well, Howard, you have earned your brownie points. Also, if you like that sort of thing, I highly recommend Brandon Sanderson as an author. That's right up his alley. But either way, so let's do another round of breakout rooms. I'll flash this back up there. But Ms. Isla Graham, topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So your next topic coming up is in the universe of CBDCs, if it's not a government launching one, who do you think is going to be successful at putting CBDC on the map? I'll put you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here just before the hour.
All right. Welcome back, one and all. We're going to do a quick everybody wrap up, get you out of here right at the top of the hour. First things first, Scott and Howard, this is your opportunity to plug your pluggables. How can people find you? Scott, you want to go first?
Yeah, you got my LinkedIn earlier. I'll post it again. I also posted an article that I wrote about central bank digital currencies. Just reach out to me if you're also interested in the blockchain game. I'll put my website in the chat. You can download that and play it with folks. It's actually, you play it without any technology. So it's good for getting non-technical folks understanding what blockchain is. So maybe you can play it on Memorial Day with your family and friends.
While you're avoiding them hanging around the grill, right? Mr. Krieger.
Thanks. Aegis Trust Company, A-E-G-I-S. I'm on LinkedIn, Howard Krieger. If you want to custody your assets somewhere safe and you don't want to worry about wallets and all that other fun stuff, you want to have like a banking-like experience, please come check us out. Again, you have to be an ultra high net worth individual, but if you have a company, foundation, et cetera, fund, we're the ones to work with. Again, global payments abound. Thank you. Have a safe holiday weekend. Do not drive intoxicated.
Noted. And a couple of wrap-up things on our end. Up next, we said before, this is a weekly event every Wednesday at 10 Central. We are going to be talking about how to and how to not productize staking. This would be crypto staking. Diffuse Tap in-person date TBD in June in Berlin. More details coming. Telegram group, join it. Introduce yourself. Good community. All that stuff. Ms. Isla, anything else you want to talk about?
That's it. We're excited to have you here and we'll see you all next week.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good long weekend and we'll see you in a week. Bye.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, guys. Scott and Howard. Thanks, Scott and Howard. I didn't do that. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Thank you so much. It was great fun and pleasure being here. Thank you.
All right. Great. Nice to meet you. Nice. Thanks for coming, Katarina. Bye.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of four or five. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.